Ronnie Laws and his band with Shamtime, one of my favorite Eddie Harris compositions. In fact, this is from Laws' 1997 album, aptly titled Tribute to the Legendary Eddie Harris, who died the previous year from congestive heart failure. And a whole bunch of really good people got together under the direction of Ronnie Laws and put together an album of Eddie Harris tunes. This is one of my favorites. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead. And we're still in the throes of the, what can I call it? The big drama in Washington, D.C. But I think people are missing a really important part of the story here. And this is not unusual because the media tend to take things quite literally. If it isn't in front of them, unavoidable for them not to see it, they don't see it. But what intrigues me about stories like this is that when you try to go beyond what is seen or what is known or what appears to be seen and known, you end up with a really incredibly interesting story. And I think this is what is happening here. It has happened many times before. We've talked about this dimension of a story on Lead Stories several times, where we located the story and it wasn't anywhere close to what was being reported as the story. And that's the beauty of training yourself to tap into your natural instincts. And so most people, if they do that, they take a look at the story and they think about it. Think about all the dimensions of the story. And suddenly, other things start popping up. And they are valid, and they are legitimate, and they are real and indisputable sometimes. Well, on July 17 and 18, Donald Trump raged behind closed doors. The repeal and replace victory he was hoping to declare over Obamacare came to naught after several Republicans backed away. And even after two separate versions of a bill to win their support, they balked at a full repeal and replace bill and then turned against a repeal-only bill that was floated as a compromise to save Trump's face. But Trump's political defeat made and is making big news. But is it the kind of news that we are accustomed to? You know, as something happens, you get the facts, you write them down, boom, you have a story. And you move on to the next thing. I think we need to linger a bit around this particular story because I find it intriguing when you look at different angles of the story. Very intriguing what pops up as a very interesting story. And I'm going to start, and of course, I'm not suggesting that my view is, quote, correct, unquote, and other views are not. I'm not suggesting that I have the story. I'm suggesting only that when you look at a situation, something like this, unfolding and affecting the highest or involving the highest levels of government, you have to think differently because it's an entity that behaves differently. The people involved behave differently. They have interests that are different from ours. So if we were to bring only our perspective, our regular, ordinary perspective to a story, We'll get an ordinary, regular story. But I was thinking about the story in a different way, and I began to see something different here. It has to do with Mr. Trump himself. What is it about this man? Why is he so obsessed, or he seems to be obsessed is the word, with Barack Obama? What is it about Barack Obama that triggers this extra dimension of hatred in Donald Trump? Donald Trump is a hateful man, I would say. Just ordinarily, he's a hateful person. But there's an extra measure of hate here when it comes to Barack Obama. And anything associated with Barack Obama triggers a reaction from Donald Trump that is way out of bounds, really crazy. Now, I don't know what that is, but I could tell you how it has been expressing itself. A couple of weeks ago, well, I would say at least a month ago, I did a commentary about Donald Trump fighting Obama's ghost. And it puts the story, therefore, in a psychological vein as opposed to a journalistic or reportorial environment. It puts it in a different compartment altogether. Here is a new president just absolutely maniacally obsessed with destroying the previous president and anything he has done that even remotely suggests success. He's going after it with incredible zeal, unusual zeal. And that is disturbing for many reasons. Look, you're the new guy on the block. Take your time and get a grip of the situation. You're not even giving enough time to that. You get to the business right away of ripping or attempting to rip Obama apart. First of all, that's just plain tacky. It's a tacky move. It's actually stupid. But he can't seem to stop. It's like, you know, that Three Stooges movie where I think it was Mo or Larry, one of the Stooges was hypnotized. And the magic word was Niagara. And anytime somebody says Niagara, he says, slowly I turn, step by step. And he goes through this whole ritual. His entire demeanor triggered react to the word Niagara. It's like that with Donald Trump. And believe me, I'm not trivializing this at all. I take this thing really seriously. Because there's a story behind a story. We know what the story is, as we've been told repeatedly since before the vote was taken. We should expect big drama, high drama, the whole thing. Yeah, it happened exactly like that. But it is not necessarily the story. There's a dimension to this that is actually very concerning. And it touches on other points that mostly the media really doesn't like to touch at all. But here, in this instance, we're going to be talking about race. And we're going to be talking about aside of very high-level politics, we have no clue about. We have no idea how they transact business behind closed doors. So we, the public, we are given things to believe in. This is what you should know, and then we'll move on. But I say we ought to stick around and take a look at this very, very closely. So Donald Trump is obsessed with Barack Obama. Why? Now, I understand, you know, he is a threat. And why is he a threat? Before you came to the White House, he had been succeeding at doing a lot of things that you might have, you know, Trump might have wanted to do himself, because they went well. They were successful. At least as planned, it worked. These things worked. And one of them was Obamacare. As you know, I am not an Obama fan. I've made that very clear many, many times. But I'm looking at this here objectively as I possibly can. Obama has character traits or characteristics that a Donald Trump apparently feels intimidated by. He's young, he's vibrant, he's appealing. The people seem to like him. He scores high on polls. And he has a couple of firsts. First African-American, you know, the first president that people seem to like, genuinely like. He has a way of dealing with people, not only within the borders of the United States, but on the world scene. He seems to have been very successful in dealing with heads of state. Even with all the flaws and everything else, people seem to give him a lot more elastic than they would anybody else in high office. He was lucky that way. Has the nuclear family, and he's the exact opposite of the stereotype, the prototype. You know, family man, family values, and not outrageously out there with it, has a sense of, you know, he's a contained guy, not given to bombastic behavior, a sense of, despite the fact that this was his first term as president, he managed to instill a sense of faith or trust in the people. I'm just talking about marketing, how he is made to come across. Very successfully marketed. And, of course, his ratings were quite high. He was well educated. He can walk and chew gum at the same time. And he dealt with a couple of crises quite authoritatively, without going berserk or having the nation freak out. And there was a sense of comfort about his demeanor, not given to just freaking out and getting everybody excited, with people believing they don't know what is coming next. He maintained a sense of stability in the country. Okay, lots of pluses. And he managed to get some pretty good legislation done. And now I'm coming to Obamacare. This was the big one. This was big. And he pulled it off. And now that Trump is elected, he's elected at a time when Obamacare is old news. It's 5 years old, going on 6 years old already, or even more. I'm not counting the planning stages of it. I'm counting from when it actually began to function as Obamacare. And by all accounts, people reacted favorably to it. They supported it. They liked it. They thought it was a good idea. They wished they could, he could expand and do some more. But for all intents and purposes, this was a big victory that he scored in getting Obamacare passed, because it was also a bipartisan effort. Okay, so why is Trump so mad? Why is he so angry about this? That it turns out to be almost like a number one target to cut down, shred to smithereens, and to pretend that it never existed, and to encourage the nation to think the same. It's so bad, it's so wrong, it's so ineffective. It has to be destroyed in order to fix it. He said so himself. You know, just let it fail so that it would be fixed. You look at the expressions of all the hate that comes out of Trump's mouth when he talks about Obamacare. Let it fail so we can take up the pieces, the shreds of what remained that we could use, and really do it right. Start all over again, which in the logical world is incomprehensible. That's a stupid position to take, particularly when all of the stats are against you. All of the statistics beat down your argument for tinkering with it in any way, let alone seeking to destroy it. You have no logical explanation for why this Obamacare is to be destroyed, or let it destroy itself, or something else has to take its place. But in the meantime, excuse me, the most important thing for Trump is to kill it. This is remarkable. One, it's illogical to do, to advance as a plausible approach to healthcare, to take something that widely is seen as reasonably successful and working. It's not complete. It's not finished. It's not the total package. But what he has implemented is working statistically. It's proven over and over again. There are flaws, and even he admits that. This is not a perfect piece of legislation. But it does, and it did, according to statistics, according to the Congressional Budget Office, according to all kinds of facts and figures, it adequately addressed a problem. And it needs to be helped along some more, because there are pieces of the healthcare debacle that have not yet been addressed. But this piece, this chunk that Obama, you know, decided to address seems to be working according to the statistics. It seems to be working, and it seems that people are all right with it. They believe it is a much better alternative to what was there before. I should say what wasn't there at all before. So let him have his credit. On another level, you look stupid as a president putting as your top priority declaration of war of legislation promulgated by and successfully enacted under the aegis of Barack Obama. You look small and illogically small. You have no valid reason to object other than you object. It's just tacky. But it's also stupid, and it's mindless, and it's scary. Because when you have a president who can be so distracted by this obsession that he can't see his priorities straight, the priority in his head should be, well, that's one piece done. Now let me match that by completing the job and completing it successfully, as Obama has done. This is president to president, all right? Sure, you're competitive. Sure, you want your plaudits. But you are looking to complete a job for the people, not for your ego, your very damaged ego, but for the people. Whatever problems you have or had with Obamacare, you fix them now. But you fix with the idea that you're adding to an accomplishment and you're adding your contribution to an accomplishment. But you see, Trump doesn't like to share. This isn't about sharing. This is about I alone deserve the kudos and the plaudits for basically delivering health care to everyone. I did it. Me alone. So he has to erase Obama's history on that subject. And then in other areas where Obama has already established a record, he's after those records too. He's after the erasure. He wants to totally erase the footsteps, the footprints that have already been embedded in the sand. That's very, very disturbing. And I would say that even though we have seen in American history presidents having beefs with each other, they have never been so careless and reckless as to let it be seen this way. I mean, openly, I want this guy. You might as well say, I can't wait for the day that Obama is dead. And we bury him and everything, Obamacare, everything he ever did in life, just erase him from the world. That's really deep. And that speaks to a mindset that has been kind of dormant in America for quite a while. We don't acknowledge the endemic hatred that exists still. We dance around the subject as it relates to Donald Trump and his political base. We say all kinds of things. We call them conservative. We say Trump is bombastic. He's a great marketer, and all these things that we put out there to take the hard edge off of the truth. He is still not yet over the fact that a black man continues to overshadow him. It's driving him nuts. And I'm sure that Barack Obama doesn't wake up every day and say, well, gee, what can I do today to get Trump all riled up? No, it's just part of Trump's functioning. He must direct his hatred at somebody or something. And he seized upon Obama for all kinds of reasons, I imagine, not least of which the people who support him share this in common with him. There's this unspoken bond, which they both understand. It's the larger public who doesn't understand it. The public can't bring itself to believe that in this day and age, this is the level of functioning, mental acuity associated with the highest office of the United States. But I'm saying that this is where he lives. He lives in this world. And ever since he declared his candidacy, he declared war on Obama's ghost. Anything that in his eyes Obama, quote, accomplished, unquote, he is going to make it a point to shred it to pieces. Interestingly, when he talks about these major issues, it is clear he knows nothing about them. That's why he cannot feel comfortable, as Obama did, sitting at the table talking about world affairs or regional affairs or domestic policies or anything. This Trump is not that kind of person. He does not have the capacity to function at a level we anticipate or we assume he's well equipped to function at. He's not there. He does not have that level of attainment. So this is why he's also angry. Barack Obama, I've watched the old tapes, was able to articulate himself, the component parts of Obamacare. He was able to discuss the details of the plan. Whether people agreed or didn't agree is a whole other thing. But he was intimately connected with the details of the plan. And so he was also well equipped to defend it in any arena. He could have an intelligent back and forth with anybody about the merits of it, what still is needs to be done, but he can cite chapter and verse on what the approach was in putting the plan together and what it achieved. And he also was quite open about its deficits, what still needs to be done to get it really forceful. Trump can't do that kind of thing. He cannot have a basic conversation with anybody who has the brains and the capacity that one would expect would go along with the subject matter. He cannot discuss regional issues at the drop of a hat. He can't discuss key domestic issues. He can't. This is not his world. And I think this irritates him. So what he does is he overcompensates. by acting as if that's not my job. My job is to tell those people what to do and make sure they get it done. I don't have to talk the details. I have people who do that for me. The truth is, he can't handle it. He can't do this. And it frustrates him. You can see it. He's so angry that he cannot be at ease in any milieu that calls for him to be somewhat authoritative on a subject. He doesn't have that. And you see him in environments where he feels or anticipates feeling that he'll be stuck or he will be noticed as being deficient, intellectually deficient. And he comes out biting and fighting and being sarcastic and nasty because he's been found out again. So he's got to have his props well-placed to fend off the obvious. And the obvious is he's deficient. As a president, these are the things he ought to know. These are the things he ought to be prepared to discuss in minute detail. But his inability to do that is one of the reasons he despises Obama. Look at how much energy he wasted. I mean, he used up a ton of energy just after inauguration, as his presidency actually started, fighting Obama, who won by saying absolutely nothing. That is irritating. Come fight me. Come down to my level and engage with me so I have something, you know, just like the thugs in the schoolyard. And he said nothing. He was just going on with his life. So it revealed, the last couple of days have revealed a kind of instability, a mental deficiency or intellectual deficiency in Donald Trump that we need to pay attention to. And right after that, okay, they lost the effort to carry out his order. And of course, that in and of itself is an assault on the Constitution. You're the president. You're not the king and lord of lords. You're the president. You don't order people, senators and members of the House, you don't order them to do exactly what you want them to do. You're not a gangster, at least I think you're not. But he's behaving like it. He comes out. He has to have the world running the way he wants it. And whether it's legal for him to do or not, he does it. And to a degree that people are just intimidated to stand up. They do not need to follow his orders, even if he is the titular head of the Republican Party. But they have been, and they continue to do so. Which means they abrogate their duty to their constituencies in order to please this man who needs serious counseling. He needs some deep, deep, deep counseling. There's something really wrong with the president. And the thing is, he's not ashamed of it. It doesn't even register that he is highly irregular in his actions and in his thinking. He enjoys the fact that he could point at things and make them happen. See? We have someone who's out of control, who sees himself much larger, very much larger than he really is, far more in need of help than his capacity to deliver it. And we have, because of his actions and his demeanor and what he has been doing to intimidate, just like any regular thug, nothing extraordinary here. What's extraordinary is that people are saying nothing about it, and they're just following orders. And this is how it started in Germany. We're just following orders. Nobody has the guts to stand up to this man. Nobody has the guts to say, hey, you need to take a vacation and it begins now. We have a psychiatrist or a psychologist or some kind of counselor lined up. Take a break and go get your head screwed on right. Because this is how countries are destroyed, this incipient pattern of behavior that not only is allowed, but is actually celebrated. There are people who mentally now in Congress having responsibility over serious things like war and bombs and things like that, who have been immobilized. Excuse me. They are immobilized because they have placed service to this individual over their duties to the country and specifically to their constituencies. Pleasing Donald Trump is now the number one priority in the United States of America. Go figure that. And the media, I'm sure, could spot this, but they continue to report the news as if he's a normal guy, doing normal president-type things. He has been shown to be an inveterate liar and comfortable with it. His distorted version of reality, they make normal. They make it to seem like this is just normal. He's functioning as a normal president would. The many diplomatic faux pas that he has committed that have caused the United States to go behind him with a scoop, like at the circus, you know, the guy who has a job to walk behind the elephants with a scoop, that's what he has reduced the cabinet to. People sit down in this imaginary world that he lives in. They take orders without questioning. And then they're terrified to say, this isn't right. And that's where we get this kind of an atmosphere where just because the head of state says it, it is right. We all have to fall in line because we see how vengeful he is. His whole thing is about, I can destroy you and I will destroy you. He's committed, fully committed to destroying people. Not at all stopping to think that this also entails destroying himself, because you have to be unprincipled to do that. You have to be without a conscience to operate that way. You have to have no compassion at all, or even a sense of what is right and what is wrong. You're only in this world that you have organized, to live in by yourself. Because only with yourself are you truly happy. Yourself will never lie to you. Yourself will never deceive you. Therefore, what yourself says to yourself is absolutely right. Every time. And it is his pain that he has to live in a world with morons. People who can't do things that he can do. People who can't think the way he can think, as analytically as he can. People who don't perform the way he is accustomed to performing. You know, crazy. That's what I'm talking about here, is craziness. And he's in office officially for just half a year, but we see the impact. All these grown men and women with grandchildren saying, yes, sir, no, sir. You're right. You're absolutely right, sir. While this man, in just that short period of time, has done so much damage, he's like he went through all kinds of protocols like a hot knife through butter. Nothing that he wishes to do, he can't do. Of course he can. He is the president of the United States. And when he says to all these people who should know better and do know better, but are perfecting the art of yesism, yes, sir, yes, yes, you're absolutely right. We suffer as a nation, we do. We know that what this man is doing is wrong. And wrong-headed. We tolerate it, and then we endorse it, and we continue to give him what he needs. What he needs is adulation. What he needs adulation, I should have said. What he needs is a constant chorus of, you're so right, you're so smart. You laugh at his stupid jokes. You tolerate his poor manners and his dumb decisions, which, by the way, are not at all successful. And you hunker down for the long term. That's the issue now that I have. It's one thing to see this, but it's more important to stop it. Stop it before it goes any further. What do we need? People will talk about, well, maybe we have to go the route of impeachment. You know, this is beyond impeachment here. This is about a loose cannon who at any moment and without anybody's knowledge could do something so frightfully wrong that we are all constantly bearing the risk of sharing in the punishment. We're not responsible for this man. He's not our creation. Those who created him must step forward quickly and do like they do at the Apollo, get the hook out and take him off stage. He's performing badly. And this goes beyond being embarrassed by what he is doing. This is trying to avoid a tragedy of cataclysmic proportions. Certainly the people feel it. They are embarrassed by Trump. They are nervous. People are actually experiencing all kinds of anxiety over what might happen next. Well, it's somebody's job to fix it. The people who surround him and adore him and, you know, throw all these flowers at him of praise and whatnot, go back to his office and pick up those flowers and tell him, hey, these are your doing. You have put this country in a very bad way. And either you go and get some help, or we're going to have to expose it. We are going to have to distance ourselves from you. Now he is in full-fledged war with the party, the Republican Party, his own party. My point being, all of these things add up to a person who is out of control, who is vengeful to the point of obsession with it. That's not healthy, and that can't be good. And somebody, if he can't be trusted to behave well when unattended, then it is to be somebody's job to always be with him and to oversee him, oversee what he's doing. That's where we are. And that's the story. That is the story to me. Members of Congress and party politics will always involve, you know, people sniping and fighting each other. But this is no ordinary sniping and fighting. This is a man bent on revenge, bent on destroying people literally on his own side. You know, this is not good. It could only get worse. So it has to be stopped. And I want you to always remember, while a story is in full swing and we think we know what's going on, we really have no clue. Because where they are operating, we have no access to that. We have no access to the essential story. We are left to deal with the trivial matter of, is Donald Trump, did he tell another lie today? That's not the issue. All these things that they're telling us are the big explosive stories. Keep your mind right. The big story is we have an out-of-control president doing all kinds of damage to this country. And he is being allowed, and in some cases even encouraged, to operate like a despot, to trample on people's rights, to instill fear. These are all the characteristics of an authoritarian despot. And the fact that we have already accumulated in 6 months boxes full of examples of how Donald Trump is unfit for this job. Now, to be truthful, many of us are not fit for the jobs we have. So I would even go so far as to say the man needs help, and somebody's job is to get him that help and get it quickly. Take him off the beat, the daily beat of thinking that he is king. No, you're president of the United States. There are constitutional rules and laws you have to follow, as we all do. But the thing is, when we break the laws, there are penalties to be paid. We haven't seen him pay any penalties so far for his outrageous conduct and behavior. Keep in mind, again, when these stories break, it is not in the interest of the major media to really get into what is happening here. Their job is to serve as a foil to direct the traffic elsewhere so that nobody sees the accident. But we have an accident in the White House. And the obsession with destroying Obama and anything Obama does, this obsessive need to destroy this man. And I say, you know, I'm not an Obama fan myself, but I see what is happening here. Laced with racism, laced with hatred, laced with all the things that no one who wants to build anything will do, consciously do. No one who wants to see progress, no one who wants to promote the other values that are so important, and especially at this time, like cooperation, like mutual respect, like working together to move along, everybody moving along, that you would purposely set as your primary objective the utter and complete destruction of these values, says that we are in big trouble. He's in trouble, and we are in big trouble too. Well, that brings me to the end of the program today. I wanted to say these words because I can see evidence that we are slightly off track here. We are off track. We keep following the hints of the media. Here's what you should think. Yeah, they're having a big fight. Well, look, when you look at it, that's the nature of the beast. You will have big fights. But then look deeper at these fights and raise the appropriate question or questions. Look deep at the fights. This is no ordinary fight. And this is not as monumental a fight as it, making it out to be. It is that Donald Trump sees it as the Armageddon that he's been trying to wage. And everybody's prepping for Armageddon, not trying to stop it. They gave up on trying to stop Trump from doing anything a long time ago. In fact, their position is, as Trump said, we are not owning it. We are not owning this mistake at all. But there is a mistake, a huge mistake, and it's been staring at us since January the 20th. And we ought to start, making some headway in discussing this thing because it's going to impact on us directly. Again, thanks so much for listening. Keep it tuned right here to PRN.FM. And I want to enlist your help in promoting the station. Let people know that this is a station that you listen to for completely alternative views. And if certain, of course, you want to promote this program, I just wanted to sneak that in there. But we can use your help in getting the word out. We'll see each other tomorrow. And again, thank you so much for listening. And we have Moving Forward with Rob Simetz. He was one of the listeners to PRN's lead stories. He was a regular, he used to write me some notes regularly. So I'm so happy that he's here with us. Stay tuned and we'll see each other tomorrow. Bye-bye.